You see, Rebecca, I don't know what to think. You're either the victim of an extraordinary miscarriage of justice, in which case your incarceration here for the rest of your life is unspeakably unfair, or you're a cold, calculating murderess and the best liar I've ever met in my life. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know which one it is.
A Clearwater woman says she walked into her home this afternoon to find her husband lying on the floor dead.
It's Larry A. Benton. And he loves me and I love him. And this cannot be happening.
I really think she thought she was smarter than we were, and she was going to commit this perfect crime.
Your relationship, there's no infidelity?
None.
It had everything, you know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll that you don't really get in every case.
I'm highly educated. I'm a woman of the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, and was always told that I could be anything that I wanted to be.
Rebecca, you're under arrest for the murder of Larry Fenton.
It's just hard to picture this woman with her fingers wrapped around a gun killing her husband.
Are you 100% certain that she did this?
Rebecca Fenton, with 100% absolute certainty, shot and killed Larry Fenton.
I think about her often. I believe she's innocent. I believe she was wrongly convicted, yes.
I sit here today because of what he said, and I'm telling you, it's a lie.
You're hoping for an appeal that's going to get you out of here, that's going to clear your name. I want you to just do something. I want you to look down the camera. Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell people watching this who might be deeply skeptical why you're innocent.
I was very much in love with my husband. I had a lifestyle that was very grand. It would not have done me any good whatsoever to hurt him. I would not have gained anything monetarial. I would have gained more by having him alive. I'm not spiritually capable of hurting anybody. I'm not a murderer. I did not do this.
On Super Bowl Sunday 2008, Rebecca made a frantic phone call to the police. She had just discovered her husband's body lying in a pool of blood. Their house, the scene of Larry's murder, stood here. Now, it's an empty lot.
I actually was standing out on the end of my driveway, smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden, bang, 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 right across the street. And I could tell it was coming from right behind the front door. I thought, that's odd, that sounds like an assassination. You know, it was so deliberate. It wasn't hurried or panicked or anything like that. And after a while, the police started arriving. I said, oh, interesting.
A Clearwater woman says she walked from her garage into her home this afternoon to find her husband lying on the floor dead.
So immediately they arrive, Rebecca runs out of the house and meets one of them on the sidewalk. And she really looked in grief.
We believed that it was a home invasion robbery. A complete unknown stranger had come into their home and killed her husband. Rebecca had a friend with her. She was calm. She was shaking a bit, and I felt for her. And my job really was to find out who did this to her and to her family.
At what point did you meet Larry? Can you remember the first time that you met?
I do remember. I took really good care of myself, and I worked out avidly at a gym. And Larry worked out at the same gym that I did. And I had seen him before, but really gave him no notice and no mind. And he and I both approached the same workout machine one morning, and it struck up a conversation between the two of us.
What was your first impression of Larry when you first met him?
My very first impression? He was very tall. He was a good-looking man. He looked an awful lot like Clint Eastwood. When he spoke with me, he was very refined, he was articulate, and he carried himself with quite a sense of class, and I was taken with that.
How quickly did the relationship develop into something quite serious for you?
Very quickly. Very quickly. We dated for a couple of months. It became very serious. We were married within a year to follow.
When you had the fairy tale wedding day, did you really feel this is true love?
I knew it was. It was the most wonderful day of my life.
I can see the thought of it is making you happy, but also sad.
It's bittersweet. It's bittersweet, but it is a wonderful memory that I haven't thought of in a long time. Thank you for bringing that up.
Larry had a very good job. He was earning good money. What kind of lifestyle did you have with Larry?
Very spoiled, very pampered. Anything I wanted, I got. I didn't ask for a lot, but I mean, I had a beautiful car and beautiful clothes, beautiful things in my home, a gorgeous house. The nail salon, the hair salon, the spa, shopping, things of that sort. Very, very good lifestyle.
They moved in, and the thing about the wife is Rebecca was one of those ladies that looked so fantastically super that whenever she came outside, all the men on the block would come out to get their mail. So she was quite a looker. He was very quiet. We thought it was a drug deal gone bad because Larry was a pharmaceutical rep, and you know, the rumors start to spread. He didn't sign off on some big deal and the mafia came from New Jersey and took him out. It was just all kinds of crazy stuff going on.
Neighbors on Nokomis Street say they aren't sure what to think after 57-year-old Larry Fenton was found shot to death in his own home.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Police did take Fenton's wife in for questioning, but they say that's just a normal part of the investigation.
The more evidence, obviously, we can get, the quicker it will be to capture who's done this.
Do we have an idea, anything, neighbors? Did anybody?
The other officers are out there talking to the neighbors. They're doing canvassing, but they haven't gotten back to me yet.
Her behavior was not unnatural. She was asking me, what have you found? What did the neighbors say?
They told me that he's definitely gone, that he can't be brought back to life or nothing.
I treated her like a grieving wife that really had this tragic thing happen to her.
Let's turn to the day that Larry died, obviously incredibly painful day. Tell me in your words what happened.
Larry was home. He was watching Tiger Woods and then was going to take a nap and watch the Super Bowl later on that evening. I checked on him to see if he needed anything. He said that we would order a pizza later, and I went back out to the gym. The last thing that my husband said to me was, I love you. I had the music blaring and was working out. I walked into my house at approximately 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I found my husband in a pool of blood. I've never seen so much blood in my life. And I could see from where I was standing that my house had been ransacked. I didn't know if Larry had fallen down the stairs, if Larry had been shot, if Larry had been stabbed. I had no idea what had happened. But I frantically tried to take his pulse and then ran outside to call 911. I thought my husband was still alive because his eyes were open. And I told him to hold on. My world has not been the same since. And nothing has made much sense for me since that time.
But the police seem pretty certain that you were the killer, that you cold-bloodedly took a gun and pumped 5 bullets into your husband until he was dead. That's what they believe.
Clearwater home is now a crime scene after someone shot and killed a man. Police are still at that home tonight. Forensic experts are combing through the house on Nakoma Street, trying to get some answers.
And your relationship, there's no infidelity?
None.
On the night of the murder, Rebecca went willingly to the police station. She underwent hours of questioning, never once asking for a lawyer.
When you start talking to friends and relatives, everyone really painted this perfect marriage. But there were certain times she would look like she was crying and her face would get red, but no tears would ever roll out.
We are madly in love with each other. We're still on our honeymoon. And if you can question some other people, they'll tell you that.
That was a little bit odd, but everybody takes grief in different ways.
We were thinking about this, and both of us are married, and we thought, well, if this happened to us, we don't think we would have left our spouse aside during that time. I mean, especially if we thought there was some hope that they were alive.
I got scared. I thought the best thing for me to do was to get out of the house.
What were you scared of at that time?
What had happened? Call the police, get people there as soon as possible.
Becklin, what I don't understand, though, is why you take the time to go upstairs. The danger upstairs, the unknown upstairs. Why would you put yourself in that situation?
The more I pressed her for information, the more she knew that I no longer believed that she was the grieving wife, and I was really starting to focus my investigation on her.
So the person that ransacked the place probably killed him first, you think?
You put my husband in bed. I'm sorry.
When I first met her, and actually throughout my representation of her, she was kind of like a broken person, sad, incredulous that anyone could accuse her of killing her husband. She was devastated by his death. So tragic for her to find him in a pool of blood in their home. They had a good life and she loved him, and I have no reason to doubt that.
Rebecca had been living with Larry in the neighborhood for 3 years at the time of the murder. But few people knew much about her.
Rebecca, tell me about your upbringing.
My mother lost me when I was 2 years old in a heroin house. I was born both addicted to alcohol and to heroin. She never really gave me up. She lost me. And I was raised by my adoptive folks until the time I was 18 years old.
How would you categorize your childhood? Pretty happy?
Yes. We had birthday parties and the tooth fairy. Always told that I was loved, that I was hand chosen, and was always told that no matter what I did in life, to do the very best at it, and that I could be anything that I wanted to be.
What did you want to be? What was your dream when you were young?
I remember wanting to get into nursing. I remember another time I wanted to be an airline stewardess.
It's hard to know what to make of Rebecca Fenton. A few people wanted to talk to me about her. We do know that she did work as a nurse for a time, but marrying Larry changed all that. Rebecca's adoptive mother didn't feel able to go on camera, but there was one person who had become close to her in the final years before the murder, and she agreed to meet me, Rebecca's biological mother.
Karen, let's go back to the very start. You had to give up your daughter, Rebecca. Tell me about the circumstances surrounding that.
It was the 60s, you know, and I was not the most reputable person at the time. I was not able to control my own life or manage it. So in light of certain events, I did lose custody of her.
Would it be fair to say that you had a problem with alcohol?
Absolutely fair to say drugs and alcohol were a problem in the 60s.
So did you have any real complaint when they took Rebecca away from you?
No, I didn't. I felt it was the best thing in the world for her.
How did it happen that you then got back into her life?
Her biological father was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And I felt that that was important for her to know, because by this time I know that these things are genetic. And I was also, you know, predisposed to alcoholism and drug addiction. So I felt that she should know what was going on with her.
You had your own problems with alcohol.
I did. When I met Larry, we were fortunate because of his income that I didn't have to go to work anymore. And I found myself, simply said, with too much time on my hands. And I ended up picking up alcohol. And I went to him one day and told him, I think I have a problem with alcohol. I'd like to do something about it. And I entered into AA.
You don't have any enemies?
No.
Any marital problems?
None at all. I love that man madly, and he told me on a daily basis that I was his world. Everything Larry did was for me. We loved each other. It was something, we had something very, very special.
Shortly before this happened, she talked to you about a relationship that she was having with a man called David from AA.
Well, she called me and told me she had eyes for this man. There's a man in AA, I have eyes for him, long gray hair, biker kind of guy. And I'm like, are you insane? What are you doing? I know, Mom, I don't know why I would pick a pauper when I have a prince.
And they exchanged hundreds of calls and messages.
He was at the funeral.
He was at the funeral.
The more you learned about Rebecca, the more in-depth and interesting it became. Very few people knew about the name David Chase. He was involved in the AA and Narcotics Anonymous community, and we really felt that there was some type of romantic, emotional involvement with him. And at that point, we also had learned of a prenuptial agreement that Rebecca and Larry had prior to their marriage. The investigation kept bringing us back to Rebecca.
Going into a little bit of your personal relationship with him, how long were you all married?
We were married 3 years.
Okay.
You have a life insurance policy?
I think Larry does, yes.
For how much?
I don't know.
Who's a beneficiary?
I think I am, because I'm his wife.
Were you always completely faithful to Larry?
Yes.
There was a suggestion.
Yes.
That you're aware of, that there was a man at AA called David. You made 160 phone calls between each other over a...
After Larry's death, right after Larry's death,
a few weeks, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of phone calls with another man. Was he somebody you had seen prior to Larry's death?
He was somebody that I met in AA. He was a very nice man. There was never anything romantic or sexual between us. And right after Larry was killed, he really stepped up and held me up. I called him so much that it actually drove him crazy, and he had to pull away from me as a friend and not be able to really help me as much as he wanted to in the beginning.
You had a prenup with Larry.
Mm-hmm.
What did that offer you if you were to divorce?
According to that prenup, I would get $24,000 for the next 2 years. But for me to stay with Larry alive, I would want for nothing for the rest of my life.
I guess a cynic could look at this and say, well, Rebecca, look, you know, if you were to divorce Larry, you would get $24,000. If Larry was no longer here, you would get over $1 million. That's just a straight fact.
Right. But a pro-tech looking at from the other end, Mr. Morgan, would say we had no cause for divorce. in the court of law, they were not able to prove that we were unhappy, that we were nothing but blissful and very much in love. We had no cause for divorce or even spoke of it. This man would have taken care of me in a very high-class lifestyle for the rest of my life, as long as he had remained alive.
Motive is not something that the prosecution has to prove, but without a motive, a premeditated murder is kind of hard to wrap your head around. So even though they don't have to prove motive, they like to throw motive out there. And of course, David Chase was a convenient motive for the prosecution.
I really feel that she thought that she was going to get the insurance money and she was going to continue to live this fairy tale lifestyle with her new love interest.
I think that if Rebecca were guilty, she would have left. There was no reason for her to stay here. The guilty person runs away, you know, and in fact, prosecutors always like to say, oh, well, he fled. Well, she never fled. She could have gone anywhere, but she stayed here.
Rebecca, do you have any theory about who may have done this?
Police are puzzled because there was no forced entry into the home, but they did make one important discovery overnight.
And that discovery was the murder weapon. The gun used to kill Larry.
As far as firearms in the house.
Firearms. We did own a gun.
Okay.
We bought one very, very recently.
Where did you guys keep it in the house?
It was kept in our bedroom, in our armoire.
All right.
Once the home was processed, then they moved to the vehicle, and the detective found the plastic bag under the front passenger seat that actually had the gun and pieces of jewelry that Larry had been wearing. When we realized that the murder weapon actually belonged to the victim, we started realizing that there was a lot more to the story.
When you were a girl growing up, did your family have guns? Were you ever around them? Anything like that?
I really can't remember. My father hunted bear and all of that. I don't remember being around a gun.
Okay.
I've never fired a gun.
Okay.
The police know that the gun that was used to kill Larry was his gun.
Yes, somebody had to have found that firearm upstairs in our bedroom and used it to kill Larry.
Now you have these people breaking in, going to the bedroom while Larry's watching television,
mm-hmm.
finding his gun, bringing it downstairs, and shooting Larry, who hasn't left that room. I mean, how could anyone do that unless they had personal knowledge of Larry and where he kept his gun?
I wouldn't know.
I mean, this is all getting ridiculous, isn't it, in terms of plausibility?
I felt the same way.
The police found in your car a bag that had the gun that was used to kill Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if you're the police, you'll be thinking, well, what's it doing in your car?
I do not know how that firearm ended up in my vehicle. You know, when they found that firearm, they found it with no DNA.
But Rebecca, you can see why the police are thinking this is all a bit odd.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anybody break in, kill somebody, and then actually leave the gun that they used? Mm-hmm. None of this makes much sense.
I felt the same way, that there was no way to explain some of this and that it did look peculiar, to say the very least. But I had absolutely no gunshot residue on me, and I was tested that night in every aspect that I could possibly be. They took my clothes, my hair, skin scrapings. They stripped me bare. Gunshot residue is not an easy thing to escape if you have fired a firearm. And if you even walk into a room after something has been fired, you're still going to get that on your skin and on your clothes. And they found none of that.
Although the evidence was stacking up against her, Rebecca remained free.
We had good, strong evidence against her, but they still wanted a confession or a witness. And without that, the state attorney was not going to go forward with prosecuting the case. It was a feeling that I failed. It was a feeling that I didn't bring justice to the family. I felt Rebecca was a murderess and she was getting away with it.
Six years elapse between Larry's death and you being arrested. In that time, you've had to get on with your life. How difficult was that for you?
I wouldn't even say that I got on with my life. My life has spiraled downward. I went back to live in that home after Larry was killed. I wandered around like a lost soul in a large house. It wasn't something that I could escape. It wasn't something I could hide from. I couldn't put a scarf over my head and exclude myself from what was going on. I lost everything, including myself. You have to realize that I lived in a $400,000 home that I couldn't upkeep. I had no way to pay the bills. I was never rich after Larry was killed. The community was not kind to me. Larry and I were judged in ways that weren't accurate. That wasn't fun.
I mean, there's no doubt that a lot of people in the community, some were supportive, but others were deeply skeptical and believed that you had something to do with Larry's death.
That's correct.
That must have been very difficult for you, living in that kind of environment of suspicion.
It was very difficult for me. It was also difficult for me to hear words like murderer.
I guess I did think it was a little strange that she was not more devastated. She was quiet and she was nice and everything, but she didn't express great sorrow. But then again, you know, I never killed anybody, so I don't know how I would react. I mean, you just don't know her, you know.
But detectives weren't just puzzled by the unsolved murder. Something else happened here that didn't make any sense.
Two fires at the same house on Oconus Street in Clearwater separated by less than 30 hours. That's why homeowner Rebecca Fenton says it's been an emotional few days.
Indescribable. I feel a little despondent. This can't be happening.
When you're standing out on the sidewalk and everyone's just kind of murmuring, you know she did it, she did it, she had to do it. Yeah, she did it for the insurance. She couldn't get the insurance money from the murder of her husband, but she's trying to get the insurance money from the house burning down.
It solidified what I felt about her and really believed to be true, that she was capable of murder.
Say goodbye. It's the end of the chapter.
There was a fire that completely destroyed your home. Some of the police believe now that you were trying to make money from the insurance.
There was no insurance on that home. That home was in foreclosure. I would not have gained monetarily whatsoever on that. That house fire was not... I don't believe that anybody set my house on fire. I certainly didn't, but I was not in a position to gain anything from it whatsoever and was let go. They questioned me and cleared me.
For 4 years, the investigation into Larry's murder stalled. Even though detectives were convinced of Rebecca's guilt, they didn't have enough evidence to convince prosecutors to take the case to trial. Then in 2012, everything changed. When cold case detective Mike Hastie re-examined the murder, he found some details that didn't add up.
What are the key things which start to emerge, which paint a picture that Rebecca Fenton committed this murder?
Very early on in the investigation, when the original patrol element responded to the 911 call, she told the investigators that she had checked Larry's pulse twice. Well, when I compared that statement to the crime scene photos, I found that that statement was not possible because the blood around Larry was absolutely undisturbed, which proved that that statement was false. She says that the house has been ransacked. However, when I'm looking at the crime scene photos, things were knocked off of tables and drawers were pulled open. However, none of the contents were disturbed. That doesn't seem reasonable. If somebody had committed a burglary to a residence, they don't care. They're going to get in, find what you can get as quickly as you can, and get out. So things are going to be a mess, but it was none of that. The house was set up to give the appearance to law enforcement that must have been bad guys came in and did this, and they shot and killed Larry, and they ran away.
They believe there was no evidence that you could have checked his pulse in the way that you said, because there was no disruption to the pool of blood, and there was no evidence of any blood on you whatsoever. What's your response to that?
I did try to check his pulse twice, and I stand by that.
But, Rebecca, how do you explain that there wasn't a tiny DNA fragment of evidence of his blood on you?
They found nothing on me whatsoever.
How is all that possible?
There was no blood on me. That's how it was. I have no way to explain this.
The police found the ransacking extremely suspect.
That's what they said.
They're putting it all together, and it's an incredibly compelling case. If you were watching L.A. Law or something on TV, you would be convicting this person, almost certainly. Most people think you're guilty. Why should we believe that you're not?
Because of the things that weren't looked at, I was convicted on absolutely no physical evidence whatsoever. They found fingerprints and footprints that were never matched to anybody that belonged to strangers. There was no DNA, no evidence on that firearm that resembled me at all. The things that they didn't find with physical evidence and probable cause.
Dr. Pepper or not, but that's it.
What is this?
That's all we have in the fridge right now. 2 years ago, I started investigating an unresolved case.
Do you know what happened to Larry?
Yeah, that's...
Do we know what happened?
Just listen, okay?
Was there anything that changed which made this a hot case again for you?
Absolutely. There were two significant developments or changes in the case.
I know your mind's going 100 miles an hour. Try to just listen, okay?
The first was the fact that a new person had come into Rebecca's life. Years after the murder, she met a man named Alfred Carey Nolan, and Alfred became her boyfriend.
Carey did not know my husband.
I know, but he knew you.
Ultimately, when I found him, it turns out he did have information.
And what was the crucial piece of information that Alfred Nolan gave you?
Alfred Nolan admitted that during a violent domestic disturbance between himself and Rebecca inside the Fenton residence, that Rebecca held a knife to Alfred's neck, backed him into a corner in the kitchen, and told him, "I will kill you like I killed Larry."
You had a relationship with a man called Alfred Nolan.
That's correct.
You had said to him in the middle of a big fight, "I'm going to kill you like I killed Larry."
I do want to back up just a little bit and tell you that they found Alfred Nolan in county jail. And he told the homicide detectives that he and I ended up in a domestic obscurity one night, and that I said to him, "I will kill you the same way that I killed Larry," while I held a knife to his throat. None of that is true. That incident never took place. He outweighs me. And there's no way that physically I could have overpowered him like that. And that's not even to mention that my husband was shot. He was not stabbed.
Mr. Nolan had convictions for felonies, which can be used against him, convictions for crimes of dishonesty, which can be used against him. He had a reason to lie. He wanted to get out of jail. So he came to us with a lack of credibility. And that wasn't sort of relieved until Detective Hasty also happened to speak with Mr. Nolan's nephew and his nephew's girlfriend. And I told them that it was about Rebecca Fenton. They immediately said, "We knew it. We knew she was crazier. We knew she was bad news." Carrie once told us that she held a knife to his throat and said, "I'll kill you like I killed Larry." It was the first bit of direct evidence that we had in that case.
This incident never happened. I sit here today because of what he said, and I'm telling you, it's a lie.
You have the right to remain silent. Understanding this right, do you wish to talk to me now? Moving forward.
Not without my attorney.
Okay.
A Clearwater woman is charged with her husband's murder 6 years after it happened.
Rebecca, you're under arrest for the murder of Larry Fenton.
They stood up and they told me, they said, "You're being arrested for the murder of Larry Fenton." I haven't seen the light of day since.
Did you say there were two pieces of new information?
I did. The other was a new investigative tool on investigating homicides, and that is indicators of guilt and indicators of innocence within the 911 call.
911, what is your emergency? My emergency is I think my husband's been shot. My house has been burglarized. I just walked in. I'm not getting a pulse on him. I just came in from the gym.
An innocent 911 caller will seek to convey information to the emergency operator. A guilty caller will seek to convince the emergency operator of information because they're already starting to create a foundation for their story.
Now, when you came home, did you find anything in the house?
We have a gym out back, and I was working out in the gym.
And that's what Rebecca did.
They believed, and they had expert opinion on this, that your behavior in that call was very odd, to put it mildly.
I don't agree with that, and I didn't agree with the prosecution said that they felt that it was suspect or that they got a specialist. You know, none of that has been scientifically proven. I don't agree. I was hysterical when I made that phone call. I don't really remember what I did or didn't say, but I do remember wanting to hurry up and get somebody to his aid.
Let me put this to you. Are you 100% certain that she did this, given, as she rightly points out, all the evidence remains circumstantial rather than evidential?
Rebecca Fenton, with 100% absolute certainty, shot and killed Larry Fenton on February 3rd, 2008. A circumstantial case doesn't mean a bad case. 100% she did it. She had reached an area of life where she felt well off, didn't have to work much for money, but wasn't happy in her marriage and didn't want to lose that. And the only way to do that was kill Larry. She was the only one with the motive, the only one with the opportunity, and everything else pointed to her.
Rebecca's mother, Karen, flew in to support her daughter throughout the trial, but unexpectedly found herself called to the witness stand by the prosecution.
You were subpoenaed to give evidence against your daughter. How did you feel about that? And when you actually gave the evidence, what were you feeling?
The first feeling was shock. You're gonna make me testify against my own daughter. And then when that shock, initial shock wore off, I'm like, well, what's the worst can happen? You know, is she gonna be mad at me? That's really what I thought.
Obviously, when your mother is on the stand testifying that your daughter has told you that she's got a crush on this guy, and, you know, that's bad evidence. But in my opinion, it was kind of irrelevant evidence.
For 7 days, the prosecution built their case against Rebecca. They called 39 witnesses. Only two were called in her defense. Rebecca did not take the stand. When the jury retired, it took just 2 hours to reach a verdict.
The moment that you were convicted of first-degree murder, describe that moment.
I just went numb. I didn't cry. I didn't fall down. I didn't make a scene. And he made it life without parole.
I mean, that's tough. That's
it was
the rest of your life.
Especially with the type of life that I've lived. My life was not on the streets. It wasn't drugs. It wasn't violence. It was a good life. But I have high hopes that I won't be here for the rest of my life and that the truth will come out.
I look at the evidence. I mean, you know, your gut can be right. Your gut can be wrong. Somebody can be, you know, I guess a sociopath and trick you. So I don't go by that. I go by the evidence. And I believe she's innocent. I believe she was wrongly convicted.
Did you directly ask her?
If she killed her husband?
Yes.
No, I didn't directly ask her.
Have you ever asked her that question?
No.
Why not?
Because I know I wouldn't get an honest answer.
What do you believe happened?
In the beginning, I thought maybe she had planted a seed with somebody that she was seeing, and maybe that's how it happened, that this person killed Larry. It's just hard to picture this woman with her fingers wrapped around a gun, killing her husband. On the other hand, when I went to the trial last year, it was pretty evident that this is what happened.
Do you believe that Rebecca killed Larry?
I do.
But this is the first time you've actually said...
Yeah.
I believe my daughter killed Aaron.
It is the first time.
I mean, do you feel guilty about saying this, or do you feel it's the truth?
Sure, I feel a little bit guilty. I mean, I'm her mother. I'm her biological mother. Nobody wants to hear that your mother thinks you're a murderer, but I don't play around. I can't, I don't lie, and I don't hold back my feelings. It's just, Pierce, it's just hard to say what is going on in the mind of a person that is not all there sometimes.
You see, Rebecca, I don't know what to think. You have an answer to everything. However dodgy it seems, you throw back a response. You're either the victim of an extraordinary miscarriage of justice, in which case your incarceration here for the rest of your life...
That's correct.
...is unspeakably unfair. Or you're a cold, calculating murderess, mm-hmm. and the best liar I've ever met in my life. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know which one it is.
I'm not sure what the question is there, but I've had people state that to me, and I've known that for the last 3 or 4 years. Either a cold-blooded killer or a victim of maljustice. I did not commit this crime.
Your biological mother, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Told us that she thinks you did do it.
Okay.
What's your reaction to that?
That's the first time I've ever heard that. I'm not sure that I believe you.
Well, I'm not lying.
Okay. That's the first time I've ever heard that is right here, right now. And I can't believe that. I just don't. Her support and undying love, she was in the courtroom, she flew down for the trial. Has never led me to believe that she thought that I was guilty of hurting Larry. None of my family's given me that picture at all. So I'm taken back a bit, and I don't believe you.
Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Sir.
What you're saying is true. Then I've sat with somebody who's basically spun me a complete lie for 1 hour in intricate detail. We're talking about a very sophisticated liar.
I believe there's a chance she's convinced herself through telling the lie so many times. Maybe she believes her own story a little bit, but I don't know how you forget shooting your husband in your own home and then stashing the gun and ransacking your house. I don't think she's forgotten that.
Thank you.
Gentlemen.